This is the Sue Freeze Show, talking about life, relationships, and achieving.
It's not a big deal. Let it wash all the bugs off my windshield. Cause you're showing me that in you I'm free. And you're still the refuge that I've just got to get to. And ooh, there's something about the way you sunshine on my face. It's a love so true I can never get enough of you. This feeling can't be wrong. I'm about to get my worship on. Take me away. It's a beautiful day.
Here's your host, Sue Freeze.
And it is a beautiful day. Some days are more beautiful than others, but you know, sometimes we just have to look out and just take a breath and just be thankful. And today I'm very thankful. How about you? Where are you in this journey called life? Are you where you want to be? You know, we take for granted sometimes things that are happening or things that we have in right in front of us. And today I think this show is going to kind of reveal just how precious life is, how precious our body is, how precious our health is. You know, on a personal note, just this morning, I went to the doctors, and I'm going to be very transparent with you right now. And I'm going to tell women all over the world, get your mammograms regularly. They found a lump in my breast, and they urgently wanted me to go in, and I'm supposed to go and have surgery done to remove this. And so today I went in because they wanted to stick a needle in and do somewhat of a biopsy. The good news is they didn't find anything there, thank you, God, but it's something that we have to check on a regular basis. But on another note, a week ago, I have a lump on my leg that wasn't healing. It's been there for like about a month. It started when I was in Germany. And last week I went in and I pushed the envelope and pushed the system, the medical system, to get me in there quicker. And I went to urgent care. I went to urgent care and got a dermatology appointment. And I went and saw the dermatologist a week ago, and he cut off half of the lump to have it biopsied. So I hadn't got the results of that. And then I had this other thing that just popped up, and I'm like, oh boy, I've got something on my leg. I got something in the middle of my body. And I'm like, okay, God, I'm in your hands. And today when I went, they gave me the results of my breast is fine, but the leg is cancer. And so now I've got this to deal with. And like I said, I got this result today. And so I'm dealing with this. And the cancer is squamous cancer. I don't know if you know anything about it. I don't know that much about it. But it's not as serious as some other cancers. So therefore, I've got an appointment for next Monday to have it cut out. And it's going to be ugly, but who cares, right? Just cut it out. Get it out of there. Anything bad, just get it out of there. So that's what's happening with me. So after the doctors, that was at 8:30. At 10 o'clock, I had an appointment to shoot a new TV commercial. And a friend of mine, I can call him a friend, Alan Mendelson, he is the one that I hired to do this commercial because he has a show. We'll talk more about that. And I told him a little bit about this, and he goes, well, you know what's been going on with me, don't you? And I'm like, no, why don't you tell me? So I still don't know everything. He gave me little tidbits during our shoot of the commercial. And I said, would you like to be on the show today? And he said, yes, actually, I have open, which is hard to get him because he's very busy. I mean, I email him, text him at 4 a.m, and guess what? He answers right away. So this guy never sleeps. He's kind of like me. Anyway, so he is here with us today, and he's going to talk about some amazing things that I had no idea. And, you know, you're going to feel it in his voice. You know, every time he starts to talk about it, I see his eyes tear up and he kind of, you know, gets it back. But it's emotional. We're going to have an emotional show. So hope you have your tissues ready. And, you know, the whole goal I had asked Alan, I said, you know, what is it you want to accomplish? And I'm going to ask him that. So, Alan, first of all, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad I'm here. I'm sorry with the circumstances that you're going through.
It's okay. Yeah. It's okay. Everything happens for a reason. And I don't know what that is, and you didn't know what yours was, but, you know, here we are, right? Here we are, right? To talk about it and maybe give someone else maybe hope or help.
I hope so.
Yes.
Because a lot of people don't know what I went through.
No, and I want to know. So first of all, your name is Alan Mendelson. And a little background, because I didn't say anything, and why would somebody want to know about this? And I'll tell you. Alan Mendelson, he's a very handsome dude. He really is. He was a news reporter for over 32 years. He's been in TV for over 41 years. And now I've known him in the last 9 years, and he's in advertising. He does infomercials and things like that. And he's actually going to film a new infomercial for Soufries and E. coli, termite and pest control. And so that's very exciting. So that's a little background. And so moving right in, you said you didn't really want to advertise and market the business, but yet you are looking for people if they want advertising, or of course you're available to them.
Well, I'm in the business. Yes. I'm in the advertising business now. It's a TV business, because I was in the TV news business.
Yes, you
for
were.
30 something years.
Right.
And then times change.
Mm-hmm.
You have to retire or move on, and I decided to move into advertising.
It's a good choice.
Which was a good move for me, because
I think so.
It was a smooth transition for me.
Well, it's definitely benefited me, so thank you for that.
Well, I'm glad I'm doing it. Actually, I enjoy it. I love my work.
Yes.
I love doing what I do.
And your son is with you.
My son is my cameraman and my editor.
Yes, Jason.
He is actually an accomplished musician.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
He went through college, Berklee College of Music in Boston, on a full scholarship. A musical prodigy, absolutely brilliant. And then one day he said to me, after not getting a job in the music business and working at a car dealer where he did their online marketing, he says, can I shoot your videos for your TV show? And I said, well, I know you do editing, because I saw that you did that in college. Do you know how to shoot a video? He said, sure I do. So one day my regular cameraman called in sick. I said, Jason, shoot this video. What he didn't tell me is that he had never picked up a camera before in his life. but he picked up the camera. And because he was a good editor, and something he learned in college, when you're a good editor, you can be a good cameraman.
Right.
Because you know what kind of shots you need.
Yes.
And he was a natural at that also.
Yeah.
And after that, he became my natural cameraman. My daughter's also in the business. She's a TV reporter in Tucson, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
But she's popped all around the country from one city to another. So I'm very proud of them.
As you should be. I'm very proud of mine, too. So let's get right into what's been happening with Mr. Alan Mendelson.
People don't know this.
No.
But for 35 years, I was an insulin-dependent diabetic. And I became an insulin-dependent diabetic right after I got my first TV job. And two or three times a day, I would take insulin shots. And I had to manage my diabetes at the same time that I was a news reporter, which was a very erratic life. Working days, working nights, traveling, doing things on short notice. The key to diabetes management is that you have a very routine, managed life. So you're doing the same things every day, eating the same things every day, taking your medicine on time every day. It's everything that you can't do in the TV news business.
Yeah, that would be very difficult.
Very difficult.
Yes.
For example, I was in Ethiopia, Addis Ababa, at a refugee camp during the famine, walking through, surrounded by starving children. I'm eating a Hershey bar because my blood sugar dropped. I mean,
wow.
I had surrealistic moments like that. There were many times I was on the air live, had an insulin attack. Sweat is falling down my face. I didn't know where I was, but I had to keep talking.
Right.
So it was a really very difficult 35-year career. There were a lot of job offers and job assignments I had to turn down because I knew I couldn't do them because I was an insulin-dependent diabetic. I worked for CBS for 5 years in New York, the network. I think my career at CBS ended the day I collapsed in the newsroom.
Mm.
I was the assignment editor, the New York assignment editor, and I collapsed. They had to call the paramedics. Sign of weakness, they don't want you at the network with a sign of weakness. They had offered me jobs in London. I had to turn them down. Jobs in Moscow. I had to turn them down.
So a life with diabetes is
a
difficult one. And diabetes is growing. There are so many people. And I was on the border of diabetes, and I didn't have diabetes in my family, so I don't understand all of it. I do have people that I know that have to take shots, insulin shots. I actually used to be a sales rep for Bayer, and they had glucometer meters. And so the only thing I knew was, you know, how to explain the meter and how it worked. But to actually, I have a girlfriend who has a pump that she has on her body all the time, and she's constantly checking it. And I'm thinking, wow, to be that in tune or have to be that aware of everything that's going on in your body is a whole different life.
You know, when I first became diabetic, this goes back in 1976, they were predicting that diabetes would be cured within 3 years.
When was this?
1976.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Well, 3 years went by.
I think they're a little behind schedule.
They still don't have a cure for diabetes.
Yeah.
They didn't have the electronic blood meters that they have today. You used to go and check your urine.
Right.
And depending on the how much sugar was in your urine, your test strip would turn different colors.
Sure.
Very unscientific
way
of diabetes management. People got sick. I was warned, you'll go blind, you'll lose your limbs.
Mm-hmm.
In my case, I didn't go blind, but I had eye troubles.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't lose any limbs, but I lost my kidney function. And about 8-9 years ago, I had kidney failure. I was on dialysis. And that's what a lot of people don't realize.
And dialysis, explain what that's all about.
Dialysis is when you're hooked up to a machine for 4 hours a day or at night, three times a week. You watch television while your blood is pumped through a machine to be cleansed. That's dialysis. It's the one thing I feared my whole life. Because early on when I became a diabetic, you know, of all the complications they told me about, the one I didn't want was being hooked up to a machine. And I was.
Mm-hmm.
And for approximately 7 months, I was on a machine. I was on dialysis. Still working. It's very difficult to work. But on a machine. And then one day I got a phone call and they said, did you have breakfast yet? And I said, no. And they said, well, come on down to the hospital. You're going to get a transplant.
Really?
And I got a combination kidney and pancreas transplant. And the pancreas transplant cured the diabetes.
You're listening to Sue Freeze on our flagship station, KKLA 99.5. And we are talking with Alan Mendelsohn today. And you lived with that for, you said, 35 years.
35 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
And so tell us about how that came about and what that's all involved, because that's really what you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, what happened is I was on a waiting list, and what I found out was that someone died. I was told it was a young girl. She was killed in a car accident. And her parents, and this is when I cry.
I know.
And her parents, while she's on life support and they're waiting to pull the plug to harvest her organs, made the decision that they were going to donate her organs to help other people. I got a kidney and her pancreas. Someone else got another kidney. Her lungs went to someone else. Her eyes went to help other people. Her heart couldn't be saved. Couldn't be harvested. And, you know, it's something I live with every day. And, you know, you wake up every morning and you look in the mirror and you cry. I cry now. You know, I say to myself, I hope this young girl has a place with God, a special place. And one day her family has a special place with God. I never met them. I wrote a letter to them. The transplant center said it was delivered to them. I never heard back from them.
Did you sign it with your name?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
I did. And I said to them, I said, look, I'm a father. I have two children of my own. I can't imagine what you went through.
Right.
I can't.
That would be hard.
But, you know, the message that I really wanted to get out was, you know, not how fortunate I was and how grateful I was and how I hope these people have a special place with God. But, you know, I like to think that God gave everybody two kidneys so they could donate one while they're still alive. And I know people who received a kidney from a living donor. And I would have much rather have received a living donor's kidney.
than a 14-year-old girl
who had been killed in a car accident.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's me. I'm sorry. That's me. But, you know, it's if there's one thing I could do or accomplish is to let people know that they can be a living donor. Now, not everybody can donate their kidney. They can donate blood. They really can. I mean, that's just as important.
Yes.
There are blood shortages every day in some part of the country,
mm-hmm.
you know, especially at the time of vacations. You know, here we are in the summer travel period, mm-hmm. vacation season. Blood donors disappear. Donations drop dramatically.
Never thought about that.
That's right.
Right.
This is the time of year when people need to donate blood and they don't think about it because they're off on vacation.
Right.
Yeah. But if they could also consider, you know, being a living donor to someone who's in need of a transplant, the government supports it. The government will actually pay for all of the medical care and surgery and everything else that a living donor needs in order to become a living donor. And a lot of people say, well, if I donate a kidney now, what if my other kidney fails in the future? What they don't know is that there's also a government program that says, if you have been a living donor, you will go to the top of the list.
Oh, and, that's true. And nobody knows that.
That's right. And supposedly being at the top of the list means you will pretty much get a donated kidney for yourself within 2 weeks.
That's good to know. I don't think many people...
No, it's something that's not... And I happen to have learned it because when you're on the waiting list for a donation, you know, you go through various classes and they talk about it, you know. One thing they try to get you to do is find a donor. You know, talk to your relatives, talk to your brothers, talk to your sister.
Right.
My kids wanted to donate. My daughter couldn't because she was the wrong blood type, believe it or not. My son wanted to. I didn't want him to. My brother couldn't. My sister couldn't. I have another sister who's ill, and she absolutely couldn't. So in my case, it was a donation coming from a cadaver. Ironically, had my brother or sister been able to donate, they could only donate to me a kidney. They couldn't donate the pancreas. I would still be a diabetic.
Yes.
But I would have been off dialysis.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, I was more fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's survivor's guilt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you wake up every day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you go to bed every night.
But I'm sure you wake up every day thanking, being thankful, too, in a whole different way than you were before.
Listen, you know, now I've always appreciated life because as a news reporter, I covered so many tragedies.
Right.
I've covered so many disasters. You know, I've been around death so many times that, you know, I could really appreciate life. And I could appreciate, you know, being close to God because I was in places where so many people died. I'll tell you a story. I rarely talk about this.
Can you hold on to that thought?
Sure.
And I just want to let everybody know, if you're just tuning in right now, you're listening to The Sue Freeze Show on our flagship station, KKLA 99.5. Thank you, San Diegans, and thank you all the way up north for tuning in today. And I'm hoping you're getting the heart of the show today. And also, if you know somebody that you think might need to hear this or you think you'd like to share it with someone, please go to Sue Freeze, spelt like fries, one word, .com. When you go there, there are 5 years. Yes, 5 years of podcasts. And there you can get things by subject matter, by ministry, by lots of different things. So just go there and check it out, would you? Alan Mendelson is our guest today, and he's got lots to say, and it's so heartfelt. I'm having trouble. I need Kleenex myself. Anyway, go ahead, Alan. Tell me a story. You were going to tell
Back
me a story.
Back in the 1980s, I covered the Pan Am crash. It was a flight from Miami to New Orleans, which was supposed to go on to Las Vegas. The plane crashed in taking off from the New Orleans airport, crashed into a neighborhood in Kenner, Louisiana. I was there on the ground just a few hours after the plane went down. And something happened there because I was walking through this neighborhood that was wiped out by the crash and got to see all the destruction and the death. And that night, the first night in Kenner, I had a dream. I had a dream that my father, who had just died a few years before, was there with me, talking to me. And I made the connection that there I was in a place with so much death and an opening to God, that it was an opportunity for my father to talk to me.
Oh, wow.
And I never talked about this before. But, you know, it's, you know, when you're on television, people don't realize you've got feelings. You know, you're not supposed to have feelings on TV. You're supposed to be a strong, independent, impartial, a reporter who sees everything and doesn't let anything out. But there's a lot of emotion that goes into what we have to hide. A lot of the emotion.
And stuff. Yes.
So
this conversation.
Yeah.
With your father.
Well, it happened. What he said to me, I don't remember. But it was just that this happened at a place where so many people had died. And there was this opening to heaven, to God. That's what it was. And it was his chance to talk to me. You know, how do you explain that? You don't explain it. No. It happens, you know. So forgive me for crying.
Oh, I think it's wonderful.
You know?
I think it's wonderful.
I know you don't know what to say.
I'm so touched, you know, because it's so amazing when you hear these things, because it's so real.
It is real. I mean, you know, and people would probably never believe after seeing me or knowing me that I went through all this. I mean, a lot of people don't know I was even diabetic.
Right, I did.
I mean, to this day, people don't realize. And I wrote about it on the anniversary of my transplant. I wrote about it on my Facebook page.
Okay.
Even have a page on my website about it.
Uh-huh.
But whenever anyone discovers it, they see it. They said, I had no idea. I had no idea you were sick.
Yeah. So all this time, you've had to deal with all of these extra things and still hold it together and you know, do what's expected of you with all of these things. And that's pretty amazing. How many of us do that? We do that because we're called to do it, or we have to do it in order to keep that.
We all do it. We all do it. We all have to, you know, carry on.
Right.
You know, we all have to, and we all have to find our strength and find comfort and find whatever, you know, support we can.
Right.
And people do that. They do that through, you know, working with other organizations or going to church or going to synagogue or prayer. I mean, it's just a way that you find support, because you have to carry on. You have to do that. You can't give up.
It doesn't do any good to give up.
No.
And I say, as long as there's breath, there's hope. And, you know, you, just your story right now, there is so much more that you are going to tell us, I know, because we're only halfway through the show. So I'm looking forward to part two after the break. I'm just in amazement that all of that was going on, even, you know, with me knowing you. I mean, I had no idea, and I, you know, I'm not with you that often, but when we were together, it's just, you know, none of that came out. Although I always felt you were a very sensitive man.
Yes. I am sensitive.
And I think it's good for men to be sensitive. I think there's a wonderful, refreshing place for that, and I love it. So we will be back with more of the Sue Free Show and more of Alan Mendelsohn right after this brief break. Hi, Sue Freeze, the Termite Lady here. It's been my privilege to serve my community for 32 years as owner of Ecola Termite and Pest Control. Family is one of the most important things in my life, so you can imagine my panic when my little boy Tyson stopped breathing for the first time when he was 2 years old. It was the most terrifying thing I'd ever experienced. In an instant, Tyson had become a statistic. 1 in 8 children in California who suffers from life-threatening asthma. Those of you who listen to my radio show understand that I'm not a victim. I'm a mover, I'm a doer, and I'm a believer. And so I did what I had to do. I set out to find out why Tyson was suffering those horrific asthma attacks, and the journey was powerful and illuminating. I learned so much about how asthma attacks can be prevented, how you can make your home a healthier, happier environment, and how you can emerge from challenging situations like this even stronger and more powerful than you ever could imagine. I've shared my family's story in my new book, Learning to Breathe, available now on my website, www.suefreeze.com. If you or someone you love suffers from asthma, this is a book you must read. Please order your copy today. And for more information about effective alternatives to traditional pest control, please call us at Ecola 800-332-2847. We'd love to help you take care of your home and your family too. Learning to Breathe, available now at SueFreeze.com.
They're called the stealth bugs of the insect world, termites, every homeowner's nightmare. But a lot of KKLA listeners don't lose a moment of sleep over termites because of Ecola Termite and Pest Control. They are California's leading ecological alternative termite control company. You see, Ecola gets rid of termites by using family-friendly, poison-free alternatives like Electrogun that seeks out and eliminates the little rascals, microwave process for small areas, and their new Ecola Heat using clean, hot air for entire walls. No embarrassing circus tent over your home. No poison gas, no bagging your food, or moving out for a couple of days. Ecola Termite and Pest Control gets rid of termites effectively and quickly. So call Ecola at 877-332-BUGS. 877-332-BUGS. Ecola. Powerful termite and pest control as gentle as a butterfly. Ask about their 2-year warranty. Call 877-332-BUGS. You're listening to The Sue Free Show.
Thank you so much, Ecola Termite and Pest Management Services, for sponsoring this show. And, you know, Learning to Breathe is about asthma, which is another issue. It's another thing that happens where, you know, you just can't get your breath and you can't breathe and you don't know how long it's going to last and you don't know if it's ever going to be repaired or restored or whatnot. And so diabetes is another one of those issues. And you know what? Wherever you are, if you have any ailment, if you have anything where you're not sure, is this going to be for the rest of my life? At the break, I was asking Alan, you know, I pictured him sitting there getting dialysis for 4 hours, 3 times a week. And the thought of Alan sitting idle like that is kind of like me sitting idle like that. It's like, what is going through your head during this time? And if it was me, I would be thinking, okay, for how long? Is this for the rest of my life? You know, am I ever going to have just normalcy in my life? You might be thinking that too. So, Alan, I am going to ask you that. What were you thinking during this time where you had to sit in a chair?
You know, let me give you a little bit of the reality of dialysis.
Okay.
A little bit of the reality of dialysis. It's a horrible thing.
Yes.
I don't wish it on anybody.
Okay.
I didn't want to go through it. But the professional dialysis centers today really do a great job in helping the patients and getting through it and making it informative, instructional, educational, and they provide cable television. So, you know, it's a chance to relax and you actually talk to other people. We discuss current events. People recognize me from TV. Alan, where can I get a deal on a car loan? I mean, we had those conversations. So, you know, thank God there are professional nurses and doctors and they care and they give you great care and they make it endurable. You know, you can endure. You can get through it. Of course, you're at the same time thinking, oh my goodness, how much longer will I get a transplant? I mean, that's the purpose of dialysis, to help you survive to get a transplant. If you can't get a transplant, you know, it means you're there for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. And there were people there 5 years, 10 years, 15 years who could not get a transplant because they didn't have a suitable match, and they're stuck. And then there are other people who have actually had 2, 3, 4 transplants, and they failed, and they're back on dialysis because the transplant didn't work. And I've met those people, too. It's a crazy way to be. I know it's a horrible way to be. I'll tell you one, you know, story which I'll never forget. I'll never forget being there. One dialysis session. I'm watching television. Along comes the head nurse. She walks in. She says, Bill took the vacation at the wrong time. He's in Yugoslavia right now. And he just got called for a transplant.
Yeah.
Couldn't get it. He's in Yugoslavia. The kidney donor is in San Diego. He missed. He's on vacation. He missed his chance at a transplant.
Wow.
You know, things like that happen. You know, it's... But at the same time, you know, one thing which I like to talk about a lot, and I'm involved with a lot of the kidney transplant organizations, is, you know, living donors. Donate while you can. It might be a friend. It might be a relative. I know people who have received kidneys from living donors who were not relatives, but they were just a match. You know, you hear about all these various drives to find, you know, bone marrow donors and blood donations. It's the same thing. It's the same process. You get tested. If you're compatible, you can donate. So it's, boy, the thoughts that go in through your mind, you know. I'm sitting there saying, you know, will my brother-in-law, you know, be able to donate to me? You know, will my brother come around and say, yeah, I could do it? Will my sister do it? You know, you don't know. It's you think. Do you pray? Yes, you pray.
That's where I was going.
Listen, I've been ill many times in my life. Right. People also don't know about this. I'll tell you some other things. I had polio when I was a kid.
No.
Yeah, I was polio. I have one leg shorter than the other. But my body was strong enough to fight it off, so it wasn't lasting. I was in Miami, Florida as a little kid. I think it was like 1957, and I was paralyzed. And, you know, my parents, I remember the story of a doctor standing over me in his pajamas because my parents called up some doctor in Atlanta who flew his private plane down to Miami. And never even bothered to get dressed, just came in his pajamas with a bathrobe on to look at me. And I remember saying, I can't get up. I can't go to the bathroom. I can't get up. But my body fought it off, you know. You're concerned about lungs, clean air. I had pleurisy and pneumonia and a collapsed lung when I was in college. I prayed then. I wanted to get well. I didn't want to die. I was almost dead. I mean, I was, you know, I had a lung tap. I had, you know, my chest was filled up with fluid. It was crushing my lungs, crushing my heart. So, I mean, I had a lot of illness over the time, over the years of my life. So, you know, yeah, you pray. You really do. I remember going to, I'm Jewish, High Holy Day services, after my transplant, where it was a chance for people to say something to the congregation about how grateful you are for the life you have and for the year you had and wishing, you know, well to the other congregation members for the year ahead. And I got up and I talked about my transplant. I cried then too. You know, you never forget. You never do.
It changes perspective, doesn't it?
You know, it makes you really appreciate life. Mm-hmm. I mean, but like I said, I've gone through so much. I've seen so many people suffer. I mean, I haven't suffered. I had a lot of grief in my life. I haven't suffered. I've had one wonderful life. I really have. You know, I mean, I've had a charmed life. But I've seen people who really have suffered, you know.
You're listening to The Sue Freeze Show on our flagship station, KKLA 99.5. If you're tuning in right now, we're talking to Alan Mendelson. You might know him as Best Deals. Is it Best Deals?
Well, it's Best Buys now, but we do give the Best Deals too.
Yes.
The show is actually called Best Buys, but we give the Best Deals.
Yes. Okay.
And I take care of your money.
Yes.
Which is what I've done for years on the news.
Right. Financial.
Right.
Yep. So if there's, let's just say you have listeners out there and they are diabetic or they're going through just not being completely healthy, what would you say to them?
If you're diabetic, follow your doctor's advice. I'm serious about this. The key to diabetes is doing everything the doctor tells you to do. Watch your diet, exercise. If there's anything wrong, go to the doctor, call your nurse or professional who will say to you, do this, do that. Don't fool around with it. If you're pre-diabetic, if you're overweight, go on a diet. Start exercising. Parents, take care of your kids. Watch your blood pressure. I mean, you have no idea how serious this all is. You know, we talk about, you know, all the modern technology that's helped diabetics live better. The blood glucose machines that weren't around when I first became diabetic. The insulin pumps.
Mm-hmm.
I had a good friend of mine who died on an insulin pump because the insulin pump malfunctioned.
Uh-oh.
Instead of getting a little drop of insulin every several hours from the insulin pump, the machine malfunctioned and injected him instantly with a full container or a full vial of insulin, and he died.
Okay, well, that would make me, if I was a diabetic, not wanting one of those pumps.
It's one of the reasons why I didn't get a pump. I was scared of it. I mean, also, I had this fear of, you know, being attached to any kind of a machine.
Right.
Which is what I ended up with when I was, you know, on dialysis.
Uh-huh.
But the alternative to that is taking care of yourself, managing your blood sugar levels, managing your diet, exercising. I mean, it's a scary way to live.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't realize it. You know, you hear all these radio commercials and TV commercials. We're here to help you manage your diabetes. So, you know, the drugstore chains like to advertise this. You know, we're here to help you. They don't realize how serious it is.
Mm-hmm.
People don't realize how serious it is. You know, if you could do anything to prevent diabetes, prevent it. Don't get stuck with it.
That's good advice. Very good advice. So borderline, do what the doctor says.
Lose weight, exercise, watch what you eat.
Right. Watching what you eat, you got to know what you're supposed to be eating. So to get with a nutritionist or somebody that helps you.
Well, you want to, listen, it takes a lot of common sense to avoid what you're eating.
Right.
You know, to avoid the bad stuff. Really, you eat the good foods, you avoid the bad foods, and you'll live longer. It's the truth.
Vegetable, fruit, and protein.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah.
That sounds good to me. Yep.
I got to tell you about my first hot fudge sundae.
Oh, I know. You started when we were going through the doorway. You were telling me about this, and it made me want one now. See, now what you've done to me is now I'm going to have one today.
For 35 years, I could not have a hot fudge sundae because I was a good diabetic.
I can't imagine that.
And the morning after my transplant, I said to my transplant surgeon, so when can I have a hot fudge sundae? Because I had just gotten a kidney and a pancreas.
Yes.
He says, you can have one right now.
Oh, my goodness. What a celebration.
I said to my son, go get me a hot fudge sundae. Well, I was at St. Vincent Medical Center in downtown. He couldn't find an ice cream parlor nearby, but he did bring me a big container of coffee ice cream, which was my favorite flavor from back in the days when I was eating ice cream all the time.
Yeah, that is good.
And I had my coffee ice cream.
Right.
But it actually took me about 6 months to get a good hot fudge sundae, to actually break my 35-year fast of hot fudge sundaes to have one.
So where'd you have it? Where was it?
It was an ice cream parlor.
Yeah.
I finally had one. Am I allowed to mention brand names? It was Baskin-Robbins. It was good.
So tell the listeners a little bit about, you know, the company that you have now. I know that you didn't want to, like, do a lot of business stuff, but we're getting to the end here, and I just want to let people know, you know.
Well, what happened is I was forced to retire from the TV news business because I had reached the age of 50-plus.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us were let go.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the familiar faces on television here in Los Angeles were let go.
Mm-hmm.
We were bought out. They gave us big packages to leave. A lot of people retired. I didn't. I was too young to retire. So I went into advertising and doing TV infomercials. And that's what my Best Buys TV show is now. It's a infomercial, which is what I call a shared infomercial. I created the concept. It didn't exist before I did it. And then I also do full half-hour infomercials for various companies. And I do commercials from time to time, too. So that's what I do. I'm too young to retire. I love television. And I love my work. The only difference is now I don't have to worry about an insulin reaction.
And you can have a hot fudge sundae.
And I can have a hot fudge sundae.
And I bet you don't have them often, but once in a while.
Actually, I haven't had one now for about 6 months. I have them very rarely. But I can have one now.
Right. So would you say that you talk to God on a regular basis? Like daily, or
let me tell you, every day.
Yes,
I wake up and I thank God, and every night I say I thank God.
And you said when you look in the mirror, you cry.
And when I look in the mirror, I cry.
Yeah.
And whenever I smile and laugh, I remember why I'm able to smile and laugh. You know, it's a burden. It's a burden, but you have to be grateful for it. You have to be thankful for it. You know, you don't forget. You just don't forget.
Do you think you'll ever meet the parents?
You know, I would like to. I don't know what I would say to them. I just don't know what I would say to them. But yes, I would like to. I would hug them. I would hold them. I don't know if this girl had any brothers or sisters, but I've rehearsed in my mind what I would say to them. I would say, I know you loved your sister. I love her too.
That's awesome.
What else do you say?
Thank you. Yeah. What else can you say?
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. I don't think I've ever met someone that's been through and what you've been through. What comes to mind is Andy Bales with Union Rescue Mission. Do you know who that is?
I know the name, yeah.
Yeah, he's actually got a show either before me or after me. And his wife donated him one of her kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
And what a special love that is, you know? I mean, and my father, he died at 60. And he had cancer, kidney cancer. And they took one of his kidneys out. And they said if he lived another 7 years that he'd be free and clear. He lived 7 years and got lung cancer.
Oh, my.
And I was at his bedside. And you know what he always wanted? Was a root beer float. That was his thing. But I watched that whole thing, you know, and it's like you cannot buy health. You can't buy it. So we have to really take care of this temple, our body, and any way we can. And so your advice for people to manage and take care of what they have and don't take your body for granted is good advice, really good advice. So we're you know, don't have a whole lot of time left. So I love your stories and I want to hear more about you and from you. So what is like on the tip of your tongue that you want to share?
Well, I could tell you the one thing I learned as a news reporter when dealing with politicians, don't ask them about religion.
Yeah.
They don't want to talk about religion.
Right.
You want to alienate a politician real quick and have his PR guy cut off the interview real quick? Ask him about abortion.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I'm telling you. I mean, that's as a news reporter. They don't want to talk about it.
Right.
They don't want to talk about religion. They don't want to talk about abortion. They'll talk about Social Security. They'll talk about, you know, terrorism and unemployment and the economy and,
and
illegal aliens. But they don't want to touch religion and they certainly don't want to touch the subject of abortion. Mm-hmm. I've had so many public relations managers or handlers for politicians abruptly stop an interview because I brought up the subject of either religion or abortion.
Well, we can talk about religion here, which is really freeing, I think. It really is. And, you know, when we get, you had a joke at the very beginning when we were in the glass room and you said something. Do you remember what it was?
Sure. I can say it. You know, people pray in church. They pray in synagogues. They pray in mosques. They really mean it when they pray in a casino or when they're sick.
And it's true. And it's too bad that people have to get to these down points in their lives in order to reach up and to ask God into their lives or to guide or direct their path. But, you know, sometimes things are thrown at us and we don't ask for them, and it's not a consequence that we've actually created, like your diabetes. I don't think that was something that you created. It's something that just happened in your body.
Actually, it happened to me. It was a total surprise because I'm the only diabetic in my family.
Right.
I mean, my parents didn't have it. My brothers and sisters, my kids don't have it. My grandparents didn't have it. I got chosen.
Right.
You know?
For whatever reason.
For whatever reason. Probably the same reason why I got chosen to, you know, have a collapsed lung so I would appreciate clean air. And maybe why I was chosen to have polio, because I'm concerned about, you know, it's changed my whole, what I'm interested in, what
right.
I care about. You know, it's made me a more sensitive person. You know, I think God wanted me to be sensitive for some reason. You know,
maybe that's the message for men, you know, because it's difficult for men sometimes to be sensitive and to let their emotions out. And you saying that you were, you know, on TV and you have to be the tough guy and you have to keep, you know, in the middle, right?
Sure.
You know, and that's got to be difficult. And people that only know you or see you that way.
You're not allowed to show emotion when you're on television, and you're not allowed to let your emotions get in the way of the story.
Right.
You know, when you're covering a story, you are not
facts.
Supposed to be emotional. You know, one of the great failures of journalism was the coverage of the Hindenburg disaster. Mm-hmm. You heard the radio commentator saying, oh, the humanity, and he's saying, you know, what a horrible event. He failed as a reporter. That was one of the things you are taught in college when you're going through all your journalism classes. Don't ever do that. That was a failure as a journalist. You know, today we look at that recording or hear that recording and say, what a magnificent recording the humanity of this eyewitness to this disaster. But he actually failed as a reporter. Today, if that had happened, if he'd worked for ABC or NBC or Fox or CNN, he would be fired for that. You know, because that's not what reporters are supposed to do. They're supposed to be level-headed, unemotional, report the facts.
State the facts.
And which is what I always did. But, you know, I reported the facts and reported the news, but also had a little understanding of what people were going through.
Mm-hmm.
Most important stories I ever did in my life was when I was in Syracuse, New York. It was one of my first TV jobs. And there was a young man who was seriously, seriously ill, whose file somehow had fallen through the cracks, and he was no longer getting health benefits from anybody. Not from his insurance company, not from welfare, not from the county. Nobody wanted to take it. And the bills had piled up so much that he was being denied medical care. And finally, his father calls me up because I was the consumer reporter at this TV station. Can you do something for my son? Well, you know, this was after I was, you know, ill with my own collapsed lung and almost died. So I identified with him. I was able to get all the medical care I needed, of course, but I was able to see that he needed medical care right away. And I got through to the right people so that he got his medical care. But would another reporter have done that who didn't have the experience that I had?
Yeah, good question.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm a little bit more, you know, concerned and attuned with certain situations that I wouldn't be without my own personal experience.
Yeah, our own personal journey, the pains we go through and things happened and we don't understand why they happen. And then all of a sudden, like there, it's like, would you have been as sensitive? Would you have answered the call, as they say? Would you have answered the call if you hadn't related to something or felt connected somehow?
So from our own weaknesses, we become stronger people.
That is so true. Isn't that true? That is a very good point. So we have 30 seconds. What do you want to say?
Thank you. I'm glad I was able to say some things here that I hadn't said before.
Me too. And I'm glad the listeners got to hear it. And I know they felt your emotion. And I am very thankful. And your time on this earth is obviously not up yet. You still have something that you need to
accomplish. Another 120 years to go.
I'm with you.
If you take all of my replacement parts, my blended age is only 18, you know.
Wow, that's a good point, isn't it?
Look, I have so many other spare parts, it'll keep me going a long time.
You know, I was surprised that I asked you before. I said, you know, the young lady was how old?
She was 14.
Right. And they chose you to get her parts, her body. And you said it's the closest.
Well, you're chosen based on the closest match.
Closest match.
Whoever gets the closest match.
Right. Yeah. Right. Pretty amazing. Alan, thank you so much for all you do. Thank you for what you've been through. Thank you for sharing and being so transparent and vulnerable on the show today. I really appreciate you, and I appreciate all that you do. Thank you so much. And I really, really appreciate your friendship. I really do. I think it's great.
Thanks.
So until next week, be a blessing to someone each and every day, would ya?
You've been listening to The Sue Freeze Show, sponsored by Ecola Termite and Pest Control Services. It's that time of the year when bugs multiply like crazy and start looking for a home, your home. Ants, spiders, fleas, earwigs, termites, and a lot of other creepy crawly critters, even rats and other varmints. It's time to call Ecola Termite and Pest Control Services. They offer complete ecological pest control of rodents and insects.
Ecola has one-time services, ongoing monthly services, their most popular and economical every other month service, and even quarterly service for occasional pest problems. Ecola keeps rats and mice out and eliminates insects in their nests. It's the most effective way, and their termite control is legendary. So call Ecola today for a free estimate of complete pest control at 877-332-BUGS. No more creepy crawly critters like ants, spiders, fleas, earwigs, termites, rats, and other pests. Call them at 877-332-BUGS, 877-332-BUGS. Ecola, powerful pest control services as gentle as a butterfly. Ask about their 2-year warranty. Call 877-332-BUGS.